All right, here we are. Welcome to the show, the Bear Fruit Life Show. We're super excited that we have our guest today, Lanny Barnes, Lanny Oakley, three-time Olympian, had an amazing story about going to Olympics with her sister, which is such a rarity. And now you're traveling all around the world, working, you know, as a, you know, chief of experience officer for a company down in Las Vegas, and you love to travel around the different schools and speak and teach kids how to set goals and how to lead and go after their dreams. And you're also an artist, so you have amazing things going on, and we're super excited to have you here and share your wisdom with us. So welcome to the show, Lanny.
Well, thank you, Kyle. Yes, I've been very, very busy the last couple of years or since I retired from the Olympics, and it's been a blast. But like I said, it's always trying to keep up with you, Kyle.
Oh, yeah. That's nice of you to say. So tell me a little bit about your story of going from, you know, I know you, we talked a little bit, but tell me about what it was like to chase a childhood dream. And when did you decide, like, hey, I want to be on the Olympics? Like, that's a pretty steep thing for a kid to really decide to want to do.
Yeah. Well, I think it was, early on, my twin sister and I, and my older sister, we were watching the Olympics and saw, soccer and just absolutely fell in love with it and thought, you know, hey, if we want to be there and if we work hard, we can get there, you know. And it's one of those childhood dreams that, you know, you don't realize how much work it is to put into something like that. But, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of shoot for the stars regardless of what it is, because you don't have, those expectations yet of what it takes. And so we just said, Okay, well, that's what we want to do. And that's where we're going to go. And we're going to do whatever it takes to get there.
I love it. I love it. And what did you decide? I think you said it was soccer that you decided you want to try to be an Olympian in, is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We loved soccer, and it was one of those things that kind of came naturally to us. And so, we thought, okay, well, you know, maybe we can do this. We saw success early on and had an incredible team in Durango. It was, you know, nine dedicated women. We needed 11, but we only had nine. So every single one of us had to work a little bit harder because, we couldn't feel the full team back in the day in Durango. So
yeah,
we had an incredible group of teammates and parents behind us, and just, really pushed ourselves.
That's awesome. That's awesome. When did you make that shift? And tell me, like, I kind of know because we've talked, but tell me a little bit. A lot of people don't even know or understand the sport that you did in the Olympics. So what was it, and how did you switch from soccer to that?
Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting story because, you know, we were heading down that Olympic soccer route, and, we realized that riding the lift up, in the winter, skiing wasn't a great way of staying in shape for soccer in the winter. So we're like, okay, well, what can we do to stay in shape for soccer in the winter? That's not, you know, sitting on a lift and just getting a little bit of on the way down. And we discovered Nordic skiing, and, you know, which is not wildly popular in Colorado because it's so much easier to take the lift. So we jumped into Nordic skiing. And, when we did, we met a guy that, told us about biathlon, and we kind of grew up shooting and hunting and things like that and really enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
When he told us about biathlon, we're like, oh man, that sounds like a lot of fun. Cause you're combining two different disciplines, cross country skiing and rifle marksmanship.
Yeah.
Okay. Two completely opposite disciplines. One's a endurance event that requires an incredible amount of physical fitness. And the other one is, you know, a skills event where it requires an incredible amount of mental, fortitude. So,
yeah.
We tried it out and absolutely fell in love with it.
Dang. So you were like, okay, how can we stay in shape for soccer? And you decided to pick up some skis and do Nordic skiing, but then decided to shoot at the end. How did that even sport become a sport? Like, I mean, it just seems kind of like one of those things, maybe they were drinking or something and decided to make it a sport, or what's the history behind it? Cause I know there's a story.
Yeah, absolutely. When you know the history, it makes sense. But when you don't, you're thinking, well, it's just one of those crazy sports that they made up while drinking. But it has a rich history in Scandinavia and different parts of Europe and Russia, where it was a form of hunting on skis.
Okay, that makes sense.
Tactic in World War I and World War II. It actually was a very pivotal tactic for the United States in World War I and World War II. And then during times of peace, the militaries would compete against each other, you know, military.
Okay.
Games. So, and then it became an Olympic sport, because it was very, very popular in all the cold, miserable places of the world, like Russia and Finland, maybe and stuff. And, yeah, I mean, it's incredibly popular in Europe. I'll have it.
Yeah.
We'd have anywhere from 30 to 50,000 spectators on a Wednesday come and watch us. And
oh my gosh,
back here in the United States, we couldn't even get our parents to come watch. Cause
yeah, that's totally different. I mean, yeah. So you guys grew up hunting and shooting and all that. So tell me the story of kind of like your first Olympic trials and going through that process.
Yeah. So, I'll jump back to kind of that decision between soccer and biathlon, because that's, you know, kind of important. And I think the biggest reason why we chose biathlon is because we were horrible at it. Soccer was easy. It came easy for us and we were really good at it. But when we jumped into biathlon, we were absolutely horrible. We were falling all the time. Like, everybody else around us was so much better. And I think it was one of those things, like, for my sister and I, we always gravitate to whatever is hardest, like
yeah,
the easy road. And I don't know if it's some sort of mental disorder or not, but it's one of those things, like, the harder it is, the more we enjoy it.
Yeah.
So we dove into that and thought, okay, well, no one has ever medaled for in the Olympics for our sport. And so we thought, okay, well, let's try to become the first women to ever do that. And so
yeah,
we jumped into it, you know, with both feet and, you know, really struggled in the beginning, but found some success. And 2002 Olympics, we were juniors, but we almost made the team. We were really close. And so it kind of motivated us for 2006. And
yeah,
in 2006, we both made the team, and it was such an incredible experience to be able to compete with my twin sister. And, you know, when we went, we were very green and didn't know a lot. So it was,
how old were you when you went?
Let's see, 23.
Okay. Yeah. So super, super young, and you've been chasing it since. How old were you guys when you decided to start pursuing it?
We started probably 17, 18.
Okay. Which is late, right? Cause I mean, yeah, you're playing soccer and pursuing that.
Yeah. So it was a, like I said, an eye-opening experience those first couple of years while we were,
yeah,
figured out. But like I said, we just put our heads down and worked hard and learned how to figure it out.
Yeah. I think that's a key thing. You said something earlier where you were like, it was hard. It was a struggle. And through that struggle was where you started to find some success. I think a lot of people, you know, they want the easy button or they don't want to struggle, and they just kind of, you know, as soon as something gets hard, or they just kind of, they stop. So what was it for you guys that really pulled you through to push through that struggle? Was it kind of how you guys were raised, or what was some of the formula, I guess, that you were like, hey, this is a struggle, but we want to be successful in it anyways. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, a lot of things played into it. You know, we had, our parents were incredible role models. My mom was a teacher for almost 30 years, and she, you know, teachers, they don't get paid much. And, you know, if you want one of those teachers that just plays movies and kind of like limps your way through it, you can. But my mom was, she was one of those ones that she was staying up all night long preparing lesson plans for students. She was so passionate about it.
That's awesome.
Loved her for it, you know. And then my dad, he worked hard and lived the real American dream, as a contractor. And so we had incredible role models that showed us that, you know, if you work hard, you will succeed. And it was also too, I think it was one of those things where as parents, they didn't just make it easy on us. They encouraged us to learn through hard work that you can get success. So they weren't going to hand it to us. You know, I think a lot of parents these days, they really struggle with that because they want the best for their kids. So they want to just give it to them, you know, and just make it easy. But there's something to be said about, allowing your kids to learn how to struggle and learn how to endure a difficult times and hard work, because it builds character and fortitude and strength. And, you know, and they did that for us. So, and I'm very grateful that they allowed us to stumble and figure things out and, you know, kind of learn the hard way.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I think it's an amazing gift. I think a lot of times, you know, you see parents, like, as soon as, I mean, every parent is different, but it's like, you see your kid fall and the natural instinct is to go pick them up, but you could also just be like, clap your hands and say, hey, good job. It's okay. And then they just get up, pop up and keep going. But if you make it a big deal, then it's a big deal. And then they keep crying and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if that was the best example, but you see it all the time when your kid is struggling with something, instead of just giving them the answer, like, let them try to figure it out and use their brain or just work harder to figure it out or whatever it is. So I think there's a time to help, but a time to let them, like you said, kind of struggle through it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So for you guys, I mean, the Bear Fruit, you know, show is all about, you know, finding somebody with fruit on the tree and learning from them and let their ceiling, you know, be your floor. Who are some of the people in your life? I know you had just mentioned your parents, but anyone else in your life who you've kind of done that with, or was there anybody along the journey where you're like, you know, going into the Olympics that really allowed you to kind of take a leap, I guess, in the process?
Well, I would say, you know, one person that kind of really stood out for my twin sister and I was our high school Nordic coach, Ron Klatt. He was a big fire chief for the wildfires in Durango for forever. And it was one of those things where he challenged us in a way that no one had ever challenged us before. We were not taking Nordic skiing as serious as we were soccer, because we were just using it as a way of staying in shape, you know? So we weren't devoting all of our time to it. And he didn't look at it that way. He's like, you know, if you're going to be doing this, you have to give it everything you have. And I remember we pulled this aside one day early on in our, I think this was the first couple months that we had joined the team. And he's like, hey, listen, you know, I have people showing up to help you guys, to teach you how to do this. And if you're skipping practices to go play indoor soccer, you know, it's not helping you to improve. And he really challenged us and said, hey, you know, if you're going to do this, you have to commit everything. And for us, it was really eye-opening, because it's like, you know, we did that with soccer, but we're not doing that with Nordic. And if we want to get better, we need to commit to it and really push hard. And so he was very pivotal in getting us to, you know, want to show up to practice and devote that time and energy into not being just the kids that were falling and struggling to keep up with the rest of the team.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. So tell me the story about you guys. So you guys go to the Olympics. What happened?
So we went to the 2006 Olympics, and, you know, eyes were this big, because it was our first Olympics and eye-opening experience. And we did okay. It wasn't great. You know, we were very green, so we didn't do that well. But one thing it did was give us motivation for another 4 years.
Yeah.
Because in that sport, you don't reach your physiological peak until later 20s, early 30s. So we were like, okay, well,
we can do this.
And, you know, it's one of those things that doesn't take overnight. It takes a long time to develop an endurance for that sport. So fast forward 4 years later, for the Vancouver 2010 Olympics, and we were both heavy favorites to make the team.
Okay.
So the Olympic process is very miserable. You start out with a big pool of people, and then throughout the year, it kind of whittles down until you get to the final trials, which are right before the Olympics. And the final trials are the worst because it's five women with four spots. So one.
Oh, wow. So there's just one person.
Yeah. And so it's just a ton of pressure and stress and just a miserable time. But so we were heavy favorites to make the team. We thought, okay, well, this is no problem. We got this. We, you know, we had great results going into it. And I had an incredible Olympic trials and Tracy, her first race, she blew it. She had a really bad performance. And, you know, she wasn't super worried because it was best two out of three races. So she had two more races that she could do. All she had to do was pull it together and have good races and then she'd make the team. And so the second race, she absolutely crushed it. I think she won it. And then the third race was going to be her best race because that was what they called the shooter's race. And that was one she really excelled at. And when we woke up the next morning, it was so foggy, you couldn't see your hand in front of you.
Oh my gosh. And they want you to shoot?
Yeah. So they canceled it.
Okay.
And they always reschedule the races because it's Olympic trials. It's not, you can't have it.
Yeah. You have to.
Yeah. You have to reschedule and give every opportunity for the athletes to compete. And they didn't. And so Tracy didn't make the team. Because they used the first two races. And just like that, because of something outside her control, she lost her dream, went out the window.
Dang.
So, you know, it was very hard for her. She went to Vancouver and she supported me. And it was hard for me because we had done everything together up until that point.
Yeah.
You know, it was very hard and very difficult. But I had the best U.S. finish Olympic performance in 16 years since they started biathlon for women in the Olympics at that.
Wow.
It was this close from getting a medal.
It
just, you know, it was so close and it just didn't happen that day. But it gave us motivation for another 4 years.
Yeah.
Fast forward another 4 years, same situation, big group of women whittles down to five women with
five spots
and heavy favorites to make the team again. And first race, I got sick.
So
I woke up the morning of the first race, just horrible cold. And, I tried to race anyways, cause you do that, you know, it's,
yeah,
you try or that's it. But so I did it and it totally put me under and, you know, end up in the hospital because of that, just cause you at that level, you race as hard as you can. And, so Tracy had the best races of her career. She won all three and made the team. And when they announced the team at the end of the trials, she said, I declined my spot. And the reason why she declined her spot is because she knew that the next person in line was me.
Wow.
So she essentially gave up her spot on the Olympic team for me.
Dang, that's heavy. Cause that's like her, I mean, that was both your guys' dream. Right. And, I mean, that says a lot about you guys as sisters and how you're raised and just everything, like such an amazing, like sacrifice. What did you do or say?
Well, so we went out, I was in bed, after the last race and she had already been thinking about this. She just didn't tell me throughout the trial. She, because she was sitting there, watching me in that hotel room, not be able to race. And in a lot of ways she could feel my pain cause she was there 4 years earlier.
Yeah.
Basically watching your dream go out the door with something you can't necessarily control. You know, she understood how I was feeling and things like that. And she was planning it the entire week. She took me out on a walk and, she said, I want to do this and I want you to take my spot. And of course we argued back and forth for a long time because I'm like, no, this is your dream. You've been waiting for 4 years. You didn't have that 4 years ago. You need to take this. And she said, she was very adamant about it. She's like, no, this is what I want to do. I've made up my mind and you're going to take my spot.
Wow. That
point, I had been having a really incredible year. And she's like, I want the best possible team for Team USA. And And, you know, we both should be there, but we can't. So, I want you to go for me.
Wow.
So, we made that decision together and I went and raced for her.
That's awesome. Wow. That's amazing. How did you do? How'd the race go?
That's a good question. Cause I think that's probably the most important part of the story. And, one important lesson that I always teach people. So, 2014 Olympics, Russia, it was, a lot of pressures. What she did garnered international attention. There were people from all over the world that were inspired by what she did.
Yeah.
And so, so right before the race started, I look over, I was in the start gate getting ready to start. And I look over and there's my twin sister there cheering me on. She's decked out in red, white, and blue. And
oh, yeah.
Our family couldn't go because there was a terrorist threat. So they told our families not to go to that Olympics. So there weren't a lot of Americans over there supporting us, but she came anyways.
Yeah.
One of the, TV, like CNN or someone flew her over for it.
That's awesome.
She was there cheering me on. And so I went out and, it was one of those things I wanted so badly to win her and the United States an Olympic medal that I went out too hard.
Mm.
And it's one of those things when you're racing, and it doesn't matter what it is in your life, if you're racing or if you're doing a job or something like that, there's always a fine line between doing too much and not doing enough.
Yeah.
And you always ride that fine line, you know, and that race was probably the biggest lesson of my life. Cause I learned several things, that I have this, this problem, I would say, of always putting too much effort and energy into something, and that we need to learn how to pace ourselves in life.
Hmm.
You know, some people don't have that problem, but, there's some people that do, you know,
yeah, I'm right there with you. I need to learn that lesson. And so, yeah, that's
a lot of people these days that say, you know, I'm super busy. I'm working too hard, you know, stuff like that. And you have to find that balance and that ability to, pace yourself. Otherwise you get burnout or you lose sight of the things that are important.
Yeah. So, yeah. 100% true. 100%. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah.
In that race, the second most important lesson that I learned, as I was going around there, I basically hit a wall, you bonk when you're in that situation, so many bad thoughts go through your head, you know, like I'm not good enough. I don't deserve to be here. Win, you know, all these things. And it's no different than the struggles that everybody goes through every day of like, you know,
yeah,
am I doing this right? You know, all the different negative thoughts that come into your head. And it was really a battle for me to get to the finish after that, because I'd say about halfway through the race, I knew that I wasn't going to win. And at that point, like I'm struggling just to get to the finish. And I didn't finish last. the middle of the pack, it was like 130 women or something, but, or maybe a little higher than that. But it was one of those things like, I learned that no matter what, and no matter how difficult things got, I never quit. And, it's one of those things, like no matter the situation, no matter how difficult it gets, no matter how much stress and pressure is on you, if you learn how to block out all those negatives, you can get through anything by having positive thought.
Yeah. So
I had to change my focus in that moment to winning Olympic glory and, you know, inspiring the world by this incredible story, to focusing on the reasons why I'm here and the reasons why, I had to get to the finish.
Yeah. So it's almost like in the middle of pain and suffering in a way, like realizing that you weren't going to get a medal, but realizing at the same time, like I have to finish and kind of shifting that focus And through all the negative thoughts kind of coming in, having to focus on the positive thoughts to be able to get to the finish line. That's definitely, I mean, that's inspiring. I think that aligns with anybody going through life, you know, whether it's a hard time in their business or their job or their marriage or with their kids or, you know, whatever it is, right? Like figuring out how to get those positive thoughts to flow in. What did you do to actually allow those positive, like, what did you say something to yourself? Like, what was it that got you going?
Well, I put things in perspective. You know, I said, well, so Olympics come around every 4 years,
and yeah.
To be an Olympic medalist, the possibilities of that are such a very, 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 very small percentage. Mm-hmm. And although I felt like I was capable of becoming that, I put it in perspective saying that I'm in the Olympics. I'm racing for my country.
Yeah.
I'm racing for my twin sister. I still have the ability to get to the finish line. I have my, my arms, my legs, I have my health, you know, besides just bonking and, you know, things like that. Pain is only temporary, and you can battle through, the body and mind can battle through intense amounts of pain if you, have the mental capacity to do it. So I put things in perspective and I said, no matter what, if I get to that finish line, that's a win.
Yep.
Because I'm here, I'm racing for my sister, I'm racing for my country, and just finished. I put forth the absolute best effort that I could that day.
So yeah.
I didn't give up. I pushed hard and I made it to the finish line.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love it. I love it. I mean, just to be in that atmosphere has got to be amazing. Almost like I wanted to use the word addicting, but like an amazing experience. Yeah. What, I'm going to shift a little bit, but tell me, or I guess, was there anything like, was there another Olympics after that, or is that the last one for you guys?
So Trace and I went into that Olympics knowing that that was going to be our last one, that we were going to retire. And, you know, in many ways it was a lot of highs and lows, but I mean, it was one of those things like walking away from it, we knew that we gave everything we possibly could.
Yeah. And 100%. While
we didn't walk away with a medal, we gave it everything that we had.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I love it. What was kind of next? I know a lot of people struggle, you know, with the transition from being, you know, even a high school athlete to not playing sports, or a college athlete to not playing sports, or a professional athlete, Olympian, to not playing a sport. What was that transition like?
So I would say it was probably a little bit easier on us than other Olympians and other athletes because we had planned it out. There's a lot of athletes that don't necessarily get the opportunity to decide when they retire. You know,
yeah, that's true.
They get forced out or things like that. And for my sister and I, we were very fortunate because we planned it out and it worked out in our favor. You know, we were forced out or didn't have injuries. So we were in control of that. And so we knew that we wanted to give back and train people and, you know, continue to inspire people after the Olympics and stuff like that. So we basically didn't even take a vacation or time off after, you know, three Olympics and you know, over 15 years of hammering hard and just dove right into the next chapter in life.
Nice. That's awesome. That's good to hear. I mean, it sounds like you're right. I mean, people need a plan and some people can't, right? It's like you said, there's an injury or something that just ends their career. But I mean, having a plan is important.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, well, what was some of the things, I mean, there was so much that you guys learned and now you guys were, the plan was to get back and to train and do all those kinds of things. What, I mean, now what kind of gets you excited. I mean, to compete with the, maybe the adrenaline from being, you know, in the Olympics to now.
Yeah. So I think, you know, your point of, that childhood dream and what you can do to, you know, overcome that and things like that. I think that's a huge challenge because, you know, when you get to that point where you made it to the Olympics and you want to, continue on at, or made it to the Olympics and then you have that next chapter, you're like, okay, well, what's next? And, you need to find another dream and you need to find other ways of pushing yourself and motivating yourself. And for me, it was thinking outside the box, you know, how hard is it to find something that's better than competing in front of, you know, 50 to 60,000 people and, the entire world. And then, you know, trying to get into something else. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, I agree. So what was some of the things like with, I mean, I know you guys have to keep a super low like heart rate when you guys are shooting and stuff like that. Like what were some of the things that you said to yourself or would allow you to get refocused from being completely exhausted in the moment to being able to focus in on a certain small target?
Well, I think everything comes down to learning how to overcome anything mentally. You know, your mind is your most powerful tool and also your biggest enemy. So you need to learn how to, basically do anything with your mind, you know, because you can do anything you put your mind to, but you have to put your mind to it, you know, and that's the hardest thing. It, you know, it comes like people that want to quit smoking, you know, it's possible people do it every day, but you have to put your mind to it. Otherwise those cravings, those things like that are going to come back in. Yeah. Never quit smoking. So I don't know, but you know, just as an example, you can, so for us coming in with a heart rate of 180 beats per minute and just wanting to lay down on the mat and take a nap as opposed to, you know, and, you know, really focus on hitting your targets.
Yeah.
The crowd screaming behind you and the weight of the world on your shoulders, you know, is a ton of pressure and stress. And if you learn how to, because your mind can only think of one thing at a time. So if you learn how to really focus in on that one thing, that one thing can keep you in that zone and you'll be able to do anything.
So focusing in on that one thing will allow you to just kind of stay in that zone to be able to accomplish anything. And do you still use that today?
Absolutely. Yeah. I use it in pretty much everything I do because it's such a powerful tool. We did this thing where, we did a keyword. So a keyword is basically, saying a word, before you work on anything. And you know, Pavlov's dog, it's kind of similar to that where you ring a bell and give the dog food. And then you do that over and over. And then all of a sudden you ring the bell and the dog salivates without food. It's the same thing with a keyword. You say, it's like relax, for example. Anytime you're about ready to get in front of a big crowd or, you know, whatever you're trying to do, and use that keyword while you're practicing, and eventually everything becomes subconscious. You say that word, and everything you need to do becomes subconscious instead of actually being a conscious thought. So, like for me, my word was relax when I was in the Olympics, because it was the hardest thing to do when you come into the shooting range was relax, when you had 50,000 inebriated Germans behind you and, you know, the world on your shoulders and having just skied a couple miles. So,
yeah.
And I found out that, subconsciously my mind would start repeating that word in my head before I'd go to sleep at night, and just like that, I'd sleep. And
nice.
I mastered that keyword. I've slept like a baby ever since. I'll have to do a single word and boom, I'm out. So
that's awesome. And did you find yourself doing, like, did you train yourself to be able to do that when you're sleeping, or you just found yourself that was the word that allowed you to relax with everything and you kind of just do it, use that same keyword for multiple things?
It actually worked for everything. I wasn't thinking about it. It just came naturally. And my body would associate a really high stressful and high pressure situation, I would automatically relax.
Nice.
So I'd find myself tense at night before I go to bed, and then my body would just do it naturally. And it'd be repeating relax in my head over and over again. A prime example was I was in a car accident a few years ago, on this rainy interstate, and I was in the fast lane, and the guy in front of me just for some unknown reason just slammed on his brakes. And so I did. I had enough space where I didn't hit him, but the car behind me, I knew he was going to hit me because he was right on my tail. So he came up, and in that high stress pressure situation, my body automatically relaxed without me even having to think about it. And I didn't get any whip. He hit me from behind. I didn't get any whiplash. It was just one of those situations where if you train yourself and you train your body and your mind, it can translate into almost any situation in your life that's stressful and that has a lot of pressure.
I need to do that. I'm going to work on a keyword. I do it sometimes, but not as intense as that I can transition it to anything. I know I need to transition it to my golf game, that's for sure. And and a lot of other aspects of life. But no, that's really good. I like that. So that's a huge takeaway, to be able to have a keyword that you can use to relax, to refocus you, or whatever it is, to be able to execute almost subconsciously. And that's awesome. What was your sister's? Did she have a keyword?
She did. And I think hers was because she always had a hard time focusing too much. So her keyword was tree. So she and then her mind wouldn't think of anything other than what it was doing at that time. You know, because like you were saying earlier, like for golf and stuff like that, the reason why we have struggles in sports and life and whatever we're doing is because there's all these thoughts rolling around in our head. And if you get to the point where you can block out all those thoughts and just have one conscious thought, then you're going to be a lot more successful. So for her, it was basically taking everything associated with sport and whatever and throwing it out the window and just letting everything be a subconscious thought, a subconscious movement, and things like that. So essentially, she wasn't thinking about anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, that's awesome.
Her body go through the motions because she had done it a million times. It's just like breathing. Yeah. We don't have to think about breathing because it happens. But when we think about breathing, our breathing gets erratic and crazy and weird. So,
yeah. No, you're right. I mean, it comes with pressure from, you know, I mean, going back to golf again, but you got, you know, you want to beat your buddy, or you got money on the line, or you're in a tournament, or whatever it is. I mean, it could be, you know, doing a real estate deal. It could be, you know, closing, whatever. It could be hunting, you know, all kinds of stuff where you need to be able to lower that heart rate to be able to focus and execute.
Yeah.
So I love that. And I love that it's applicable at a high level for like Olympians, and also for like your everyday, you know, mom trying to deal with your kids. So,
yeah. Well, it's one of those things, like, you know, people always put Olympians on a pedestal, but we're still people. We have the same struggles that everybody else does, just maybe at a different level of intensity. So
yeah, you just,
the same things that we do, you can apply to anything in life.
Yeah. 100%. 100% agree. Awesome. So what are some of the things, I know you're competing and doing all kinds of stuff. What are some of the things that you're excited about coming up?
So, one big thing that I'm excited about, and I won't know about for another month, is I just actually, yesterday submitted my, proposal to become one of three Olympic artists again in the 2024 Olympics.
Whoa.
I was one of three chosen in 2018, and I applied again. I don't know if they'll accept me again or not. I hope so, but I'll be able to, if I am accepted, create original works of art, and then also work with a bunch of school children on a collaborative piece of art over in France.
That's awesome. So you'll do that this next Olympics in France. If you get chosen, you'll get to work on some art pieces together. That's awesome. So if someone wanted to find your art, where could they find that at?
So I have a website, theolympianartist.com.
Theolympianartist.com. Okay. I'll make sure I put that in the description. And what type of art?
I like to do anything and everything, but one thing that, that probably is my favorite and that I've been doing the most of is white charcoal on black. And again, because I'm crazy and I like things to be as hard as possible. When you do white on black, it's the opposite of what you would do normally. So it kind of works the opposite side of the brain, and it's a lot more of a challenge.
Okay. So wow.
Basically do what you would normally do. And so it, to me, it creates a really dramatic effect on canvas or paper or whatever. And, you can really play with shadows and, you know, fun things like that. And it's a lot more challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. You seem to really like that challenging thing. what else are you doing that's challenging?
So I'm working as the chief experience officer for a big facility out in Las Vegas.
Okay. And
we're essentially building up, it's called Prairie Fire Nevada, and we're essentially building up the, trying to create the American experience where anything outdoors, it's on a shooting range, but anything outdoors, whether it's, you know, rock climbing, we have incredible ropes course, and we're just trying to create a Disney World of outdoor activities, at this facility. So it's an incredible challenge because, we're essentially trying to do something that has never been done before by creating the Disney World of outdoor American experiences. But, I'm pretty excited about it. It should be fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. So having to be creative, but then also pull from like maybe some historical stuff that's been done. So, I mean, give me an example of like, I know you said ropes course and stuff like that, but if someone goes there, what are they going to experience? What are they going to do?
Well, they could, like what we're going to do is anything and everything, but outdoors, you know, kind of, cater towards those true authentic American experiences. Whether it's learning how to shoot a firearm or, going on a ropes course or navigating, mountain bike trails or ATVing, or, I mean, there's so many things that we're going to be doing here on site, zip lining.
Nice.
So, we just have,
that's a lot awesome. Of
things we're going to be doing and, you know, trying to allow people, they could bring their family and have a lot of different interests and maybe they can go through different things during the day, but they can come back together at night and, you know, really enjoy it and share those moments and memories and things like that. So we're creating a place where everybody's welcome. So, you know, let's say if the mom wants to go take a firearms course, but the dad's like, well, that's not my thing. I want to go, mountain biking, you know, then they can do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come together and share those memories in the evening.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think the experience business is a place where, I mean, I think people want, right? People want experiences. They want memories with their families and their kids and their friends and to be able to go and, you know, tell stories afterwards of, hey, we did this and that. And remember when we did this, like that's awesome. So I think that's going to crush it.
Well, I think it's one of those things, you know, people look back on their childhood or, you know, different parts of their life and they remember those experiences that you said, you know, and I think those are so important because it's one of those things, if you set the experiences up right, where it's hard work, there's training involved, there's, you know, overcoming certain things, but you hide all that in just a massive amount of fun. People learn so much from that.
Yeah.
Walk away better versions of themselves and just don't realize it.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's awesome. I mean, you're literally teaching people to become better versions of themselves by having fun.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I could see that being big for like also like youth and maybe struggling youth and stuff like that too.
Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, I appreciate your time so much today. It's been amazing. I love, you know, all the golden nuggets in here. I'm excited to, you know, have this episode drop. What if someone wanted to get a hold of you, Lanny, how would they reach you?
They could contact me on social media at Lanny Oakley, or they can visit my website, LannyOakley.com.
Okay, perfect. And we'll make sure we put it in the description so people can find your art and they can book you for their next event at speaking, and they can come check you out at your, you know, what you got going on in Las Vegas, all the experience stuff. So that's exciting. So appreciate your time, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Kyle. It was great talking to you.
Awesome.